through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome into Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross here. News breaking just a couple minutes ago. The Seahawks and general manager John Schneider have reached an agreement on a contract extension through the 2027 NFL draft. That's since been confirmed by the team. Quick reaction here, Jake. I actually feel pretty good about this. I'll tell you why in a second. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good about this. This is a situation to me where with John Schneider being signed on and getting this extension brings a little bit more stability in this current situation. And I believe that John Schneider was looking harder at these other alternative situations like Detroit, like other organizations out there, more so than maybe what people thought. And certainly that more than what I was thinking at the beginning of this. And that is why I believe it. I find it very curious, Stacy, that throughout this time, John Schneider, Pete Carroll have been in lockstep every step of the way since they have been here in Seattle. Their contracts have reflected each other. They've been right there together. Yet this time around, at this stage, John Schneider's contract and his extension runs through 2027, not through 2025, which is when Pete Carroll's contract ends. So you have a little bit of difference here in terms of contract, at least, last man standing. And right now, the last man standing of this trio that you have here between Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, and John Schneider is, in fact, John Schneider. And so I don't know what the negotiations were for John, what the terms of agreement were for John, but I do have to believe that just in the given aspect of seeing this contract, there's not just an element of wanting a little bit more control or a little bit more say over roster decisions, Stacy, but that your long-term future is secure and that you potentially, this is where I find it very fascinating, is that you potentially have the ability to hire a new head coach when that time comes. Pete Carroll, I do not see him, you know, coaching past, you know, 74, 75 years old here in Seattle. I could be wrong by that. I mean, his energy is off the charts, and who knows how much success they will have over the next five seasons under Pete Carroll. But I do think that part of it is very intriguing to me, that John Schneider, when there will be a new head coach at some point in time, he will be the man in charge to hire the new head coach, to have full control over what is going on. So that's what really stands out to me.
Yeah, the gap in the extra 2+ years of basically time with the team, I would imagine that had to be a little bit of an incentive. John Schneider sharing that control a little more than some other GMs around the league would normally. Pete Carroll, meaning, has more control than other head coaches would. I also, the timing of it is so fascinating, not because we weren't expecting the Seahawks to have to make some kind of move to keep John Schneider in Seattle, with so many other teams, not just the Lions this year, but the Packers the year prior, having very open interest in pursuing Schneider. And the Packers would have been an incredibly tempting offer going back to his old stomping grounds. But I think that the timing of it as far as news is interesting, because just the other day, I'm not sure if anyone saw it, it was a post on Deadspin, but a colleague over on our sister station, Cairo FM, said, hey, you know, we do a daily sports hit. And he was like, hey, I just saw this article. It's on Deadspin. I want to see if you want to talk about it. I was like, sure, send it over, thinking it's going to be, you know, oh, Seahawks, you know, fell off a cliff offensively. Russell Wilson can't be the MVP. That's what I'm expecting, right? He sends over the article, and the article is, after building the Seahawks, GM John Schneider is now destroying the Seahawks. And I was baffled. This is not the title I was expecting.
Yeah.
And you could make the case, certainly, very easily, in fact, that they have not had the same draft success that they did in 2012. And that in retrospect, a lot of that 2012 class is a little more luck, a little more striking gold and a mix of scouting than it was just pure genius. I mean, there was great scouting there, great effort there, but it is rare to find a class that incredibly successful. And I get that. But John Schneider destroying the Seahawks? I mean, we talked about it, and I was like, I refuse to believe this. I understand what this article is trying to get at, but absolutely not. Tell me how this defense was not in part saved because of the efforts by, yes, Ken Norton, defensive coordinator Ken Norton, and Carroll coaching them up in the accountability meetings, but also the specific moves John Schneider made. The trade for Jamal Adams, which, you know, he was a guy a lot of guys were, or teams were pursuing, but also the trade for Carlos Dunlap with the Cincinnati Bengals, who don't often trade, and you got Carlos Dunlap to restructure his deal and move a couple million into the following season.
Right.
Those are great moves.
They are great moves, and when you talk about the defensive turnaround, a lot of that had to do with the pass rush, right? And when that pass rush got better was when Carlos Dunlap arrived. So, yeah, I do fully agree with you that John Schneider – you're never going to bat 1,000 in terms of the moves that you make. And in 2020, the offseason moves that they made, they didn't bat 1,000. But I do think that they made moves that gave them the best opportunity to put them in the position to not only win their division, to get them into the playoffs, but also to give themselves a chance to get to a Super Bowl. And now John Schneider and this group right now find themselves in a very difficult position in terms of their cap space. Part of that has to do with the pandemic overall, not necessarily their decisions, but also the draft capital that you gave up for Jamal Adams. But I believe more so than ever that I have more confidence in John in this front office than I had in previous years. And when you just look back at the last two draft classes, okay, the last two draft classes I think have been very, very good for the Seahawks. LJ Collier, look, we all know that was a reach in terms of a first-round pick, but he really started to play a lot better this season in his second year. That gives me that encourages me that you found a player that can bring legitimate contributions to this team. Marquise Blair, we haven't seen him get going, but I think that he's got all the opportunity, if he can come back from this ACL injury, to be a strong contributor to this group. DK Metcalf, we know, is a star. You were able to get some good quality contributions to your special teams, and then Ugo Amadi being your starting nickel. And then this last year, pretty much every single rookie contributed in some form or fashion. Obviously, the only one that didn't was Daryl Taylor, and you heard Pete Carroll say that Daryl Taylor could have played in this next game had mm-hmm. they advanced. And the excitement that everyone has about Daryl Taylor and his ability is through the roof. So Jordan Brooks played well. Damian Lewis played outstanding. I mean, you have two blue chip quality players already just between those two guys, and you might have a third with Daryl Taylor and great contributions from guys in that draft class. So we'll see how they're able to build, but I'm really, really positive about John Schneider getting his extension.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross here with you. Breaking news a couple minutes ago, the Seahawks and John Schneider have reached an agreement on a contract extension through the 2027 draft. The team has since confirmed this news. Now, we've been talking about everything Schneider has done up to this point. Other teams kind of doing their best to court him away from Seattle. The Seahawks recognizing a valued commodity and making a move to extend him, to keep him with the Seahawks again. That 2 years past Pete Carroll's current deal. We've talked about what he's done. We talked about what John Schneider did specifically in 2020. Let's take a quick look forward here. We've got a great conversation we're going to have about Pete Carroll and the coaching that Jake and I had planned prior to this news. We're going to push that back just a little bit, but you guys don't want to go anywhere. Let's talk a bit about looking forward for John Schneider, because he's at an interesting turn, Jake. This team, not only has there been a reiteration of its plan to focus on the run by Pete Carroll, but John Schneider now entering the NFL draft this year and next year without a first-round pick. Those were traded for Jamal Adams in an exchange with the Jets. Jets now drafting at number 23 overall. Seahawks will be on the board with their second pick. Obviously, you can trade up. Highly doubt they do that. So here's what's on the table for him, in my mind. You've got to look to protect Russell Wilson. You've got two free agents on your starters on your offensive line. You've got left guard Mike Iupati entering as an unrestricted free agent, and you've got center Ethan Posick. I'm going to guess Ethan Posick, Jake, is someone they look to bring back potentially. Upati, given his age, probably someone they choose to move on from.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do there without as much draft capital as you've had in years past? Would the offensive line not be a top priority for you?
Well, essentially, Stacey, to answer that question, I think it comes with the idea of what Pete Carroll believes and John Schneider believe they need to do as a roster to move forward. And here in cut number two, Pete Carroll talks about how he sees a bright future for this particular group that they rolled out in 2020, despite the loss to the Rams.
The fact that we lost this game. Yeah, that's it sucks. But that's it. And any more than that right now. We should have orchestrated better. We should have played better. We should have executed better. I should have coached better. And if we did all that, then we would have been playing this week, you know, and that's what we should, in my mind, should have done. And we came up short there. But we didn't come up short in this football season. And we did not take away a ton. This is a young nucleus of this football team with veteran leadership that's coming back around. We should bring this group back together as closely as we can and as tightly as we can, because it's a really winning football club, and we know that.
So if you really believe that, and I disagree that you didn't come up short, you did with the talent that you had, but look, you're 12-4, you won the division. I can definitely understand where he's coming from. But if you believe that this team has all the makings of being able to make a legitimate Super Bowl run, well, now you only have a few decisions with your cap to improve your roster. And what is the area that you could look at? I'd ask this question to our audience, the Vizzy Heart Seltzer text line, 710-710. If you could improve this roster from the 2020 season, where would you make those improvements? And to me, where I would make those improvements, and maybe this is because I'm a quarterback, but I actually think that this was more detrimental to this team, as it more so than we ever realized, was the offensive line. The offensive line is an area in which they need to improve. They already have three of their five coming back. That is assuming that Dwayne Brown is coming back and is going to be ready to go for the next season at this stage in his career. But you have Dwayne Brown, you have Damian Lewis, and you have Brandon Schell. Those are the three guys that you for sure have under contract. You have to improve in the interior of your offensive line. And look, if you want to run the ball, if you're Pete Carroll and you want to run the ball, you got to get better up front. If you want to protect Russell Wilson and you want to give him more time to take deep shots down the field, which I hope that they don't just focus on that area, that they develop a better intermediate to short pass game in 2021, you need to have an offensive line that can protect Russell Wilson. For the first time in his career, can we at least give this guy a top 10 level offensive line? And they were that at the beginning of the season. They were actually 15th is what they were according to Pro Football Focus. And look at what the offensive explosion was like when Russ had legitimate time. And I think that has to be the area of focus moving forward. If you're John Schneider, left guard, center. I don't care. If you bring back Ethan Posick, I think that's okay. You'll probably be able to bring him back on an inexpensive deal. But you better seriously invest in that left guard position, Stacey, because guess what? In your own division, you face some of the best pass rushing units in the NFL. The 49ers, the Rams, and the Arizona Cardinals. Remember, they have Chandler Jones, one of the best sack artists in the NFL. They have a great group that can really cause this offense problems with their blitz packages. You have to be better at protecting up front, and you have to be better at being able to run the ball when you want to. And so Pete Carroll talks about running the football being more effective there, Stacey. Well, part of that comes from investing in this offensive line, and that's the one area to me that could have been drastically improved here in this 2020 season. And you look at the second half of the season, Stacey, why did they go to the style of offense that they did? Part of it was turnovers, mm-hmm. right? I think that was a huge part of it, to be honest with you. But another big part of it was the fact that Pete Carroll and this group did not believe that offensive line could protect Russell Wilson on a consistent basis, and therefore you needed to play more conservatively. And you can't ever go into games moving forward with this dynamic of a group and say that we just can't protect, we can't get that part done.
Yeah, John Schneider with a couple big, big decisions to make there as far as personnel goes. Also on the defensive side of things, and we're going to be getting into conversations later this offseason about which pieces he should re-sign, in our opinion, which ones are leaving. KJ Wright, one of those guys, Shaquille Griffin, Chris Carson. So lots of important decisions for John Schneider to make, but he will be making them with the Seahawks after agreeing to that extension through the 2027 NFL draft. That news, again, breaking just a couple minutes ago. We'll be keeping an eye on that, and the story will be up on 710sports.com shortly, so keep an eye on that for the latest updates. Until then, let's get to three questions brought to you by Tila Morgan.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
A little trigger happy.
Wow.
There. Sorry for just bulldozing.
I should have screamed,
Stacey.
Brought to you by Tila Morgan.
Yeah. National championship game last night. It was all Alabama all night long. He called nearly a perfect game in the national championship. So do you think Steve Sarkisian will experience more success at Texas than he did at Washington or USC?
Unfortunately, yes.
I think yes. But here's also the problem is that Sark, as a head coach, has yet to prove that he can be a legit head coach at the college level. It's one thing to be the offensive coordinator at Alabama when you have all the talent in the world. It's another thing to run your own program, to set your vision, your culture, and to recruit the guys that you want and to have to compete with everybody else in the country. Sark is at Texas right now. They have all the ability to get big-time recruits there, and I think Sark's personality, his energy, and everything that we've seen from him can bring that. And the national championship game, him as a coach, I mean, if you're not a talented wide receiver, talented quarterback, anybody on the offensive side of the ball, how are you not wanting to play for Sark at this stage? But I think that's a legit question that he has to ask or that he has to answer. But in terms of the way that he called that game, he couldn't have made any bigger of a statement. And I promise you that there were probably a receiver or two here in this town that was watching that game going, man, I'd love to get that Devonta Smith treatment there. I'd love to be able to get a variety of different ways to get the ball to me. I think a lot of that was going
well, and clever ways to do it, too. Figuring out how to get your best weapon, one of the best weapons in college football, Devonta Smith, lined up somehow, getting a linebacker trailing him. Like, God, that's amazing. That's great game planning. It's always interesting if someone can succeed so well in one spot, offensive coordinator, and sometimes it doesn't translate to a head coaching position. I actually really hope he does well. And I'm interested to see it. You could not have gone out on a better note. And 215 yards for Devonta Smith. Curtis, by the way, with a great tweet. Shout out a kid from Kent. What was it, Curtis?
He left the game with 215 yards in the first half. He was, at that point, he was on pace for 430 and 6 touchdowns. Both would be personal bests.
Number 2.
I like it.
Question 2, how will you feel about the Seahawks' end of the season if the Rams play the Packers close?
I feel a lot better. I will feel a lot better if that is truly the case. If the Rams are able to slow down Aaron Rodgers and this offense, I will feel a lot better about what happened to the Seahawks. Because then that means, look, there was legitimacy in the fact that this Seahawks offense was going to have an uphill battle no matter what. And to expect them to score 30 points or 25 points, that's a really difficult ask. And so it just comes down to what Pete Carroll was saying, that, hey, you can't turn the ball over. You can't afford to turn the ball over in those games. And that also comes back on your defense, that, hey, if your defense could have played better, then it gives you a chance to win. And unfortunately, they gave up 23 points. So in normal circumstances, that would be totally fair from your defense. That would be winning football. But when you're going up against a group that is struggling on offense, that doesn't really have, they are one-dimensional essentially with Jared Goff, that's not a good look. And you were not able to effectively stop the run game when you knew that's all they had in their bag to be able to beat you. So I think, when it's all said and done, I think that's what I would end up thinking about that game. But I don't know, guys. I've got a feeling that that's not necessarily going to be the case.
No, I don't think so either, which is unfortunate. I think that it would be interesting for two reasons. One, you'd presumably, because I'm assuming the Saints advance, you'd presumably have the Saints and Rams meeting once again in the championship, Saints getting a chance for some revenge. You'd also have a team, a defense that beats the number one seed and makes you look just a little bit better there. Again, agree with Jake. I don't think that's going to happen. And I also have absolutely no interest in just an objective viewer of seeing Jared Goff in this offense in the championship game. I am sorry. Cam Akers was phenomenal. I know Jared Goff has his moments. They have great receivers. I am not like bagging on the Rams offense as a whole. And who am I to say anything when the quarterback that we cover had 11 completions in that game and an interception? But I'm sorry, Jared Goff completed 9 passes. Like, this is not the offense I want to see. I want to see Green Bay and New Orleans. So,
number 3.
Interesting hire made by the Dallas Cowboys yesterday. Defensive coordinator Dan Quinn, former Seahawks defensive coordinator.
Yes.
So with that hire in mind, do you think Earl Thomas will follow him to Dallas?
That is a great question. I think there's a strong possibility. Now, what Dan Quinn and the Dallas Cowboys better figure out is figure out where Earl Thomas is at mentally. That's the biggest issue. That's the biggest issue right now. We all know Earl Thomas is still a good football player, but there were a lot of things that were going on in his personal life that obviously got in the way of his ability to play on the field. And also, is he willing to be a good teammate? Right? That's the biggest thing. And that's why he got ran out of town with the Baltimore Ravens. It had nothing to do with his talent. It had everything to do with his selfishness, right? And his desire to focus on Earl Thomas rather than the team and the defense. And he put himself before everybody else. And that's something that you've got to really dial in if you're going to bring Earl Thomas in there to Dallas. Because, you know, I think Dan Quinn could get the best out of him, but only if Earl is in the right headspace to do so.
Yeah, I don't always believe immediately when there's any kind of national narrative about how a player is, because sometimes that kind of gets spun out of control. But when you hear that teammates themselves, like when I hear that teammates or players are opposed to someone, that's when I take kind of a second glance.
Well, and it wasn't just the Ravens that were opposed to having him on
their
team. It was the Texans, too. The Texans held a player vote because they were about to bring Earl in, and they didn't want anything to do with him.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's a no. I am rooting for Dan Quinn there. He was such a likable coach here. I've never covered him personally. Jake, you do know him a bit more, correct? Or no?
Or Earl?
No. Well, not Earl. I know you know Earl, because one of my favorite stories is Earl coming up to you after practice and being like, hey, have you thought about doing this? Am I remembering that right?
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. I also would throw Earl in pregame. I would throw Earl like his pregame routine of, you know, dropping back, you backpedal and you know, I'd throw the ball right or left down the field, and he'd go get his catches in or whatever. But I mean, those are some fond memories that you have just of that group and just, you know, the work that they put in, right? How much they love the game. But yeah, with Earl, you know, he can be great. Like I said before, as long as he's in the right mental space and he's been able to sit back and look at the game and not have the game, because I know the game matters to him. He loves football. Football is his life. And I think that you could argue that, unfortunately, for him, being able to not have that led to some of these decisions that he's made. But sometimes when you get things taken away from you, it refocuses you.
Is he maybe the most intense player you've been around?
Yeah, I would say so.
Who's the number one most intense player when you were around him? You were like, oh my God, this guy's living, breathing football.
Sherm was really intense. Michael Bennett had just a really big personality that could be tense at times. But Earl was just, he was more quiet, right? It was more quiet. He wasn't boisterous. He didn't say much. So
like me.
I think he was the one that felt the most intense,
because
exactly you never knew what he was saying. With Sherm, you and Michael Bennett, you knew exactly what they were thinking, because they weren't holding anything back.
All right, the Seahawks have extended GM John Schneider through the 2027 draft. What's the most important decision he'll have to make this offseason? We'll ask the Groz next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Joining us right now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer, is the Groz. Hey, Groz, how are you?
Hi, guys. How's it going today?
Good, good. We were just covering the news, breaking just before our show started, that GM John Schneider has been extended with Seattle through the 2027 draft. He's got a lot of decisions to make, not just in the years to come, but even in the next couple of weeks and months to come. What do you think is the most important one as far as this free agency period?
I guess it's the Chris Carson decision, although I'm not sure that's the toughest one because I'm not sure they're going to be able to extend him. But of the most prominent players that they have available for free agency, I would assume that that's probably the biggest one. I think his biggest challenge is to fix the offensive line moving forward. But I would say that the Chris Carson decision is probably the thorniest one for him. And also, I think what they're going to do with KJ Wright, because it appears as though it looks like the salary cap's going down, and it's going to be very difficult, and that may be a very difficult move that they got to make.
Now, I totally agree with you, Groz, and really, how do you? One of the challenges for John Schneider is how do you navigate the next couple seasons? To be honest, without that draft capital, and this season you're going to be hamstrung in terms of the cap space you have due to the pandemic and the cap coming down. So this is going to prove John Schneider and his ability to pull off great deals and find the diamonds in the rough more than any other year, don't you think?
Well, I think what's interesting about it too, Jake, is everyone's in the same boat. I mean, it'd be one thing if this was, you know, what happened to the Patriots this year, what Belichick was talking about how they sold out for the last 3 years and they knew that they were going to be way over and going to have to deal with it. Everyone's way over. Everyone's in the same boat. No one anticipated the salary cap going down at the start of the year. So there will be bargains where you don't expect them to be. There will be guys that aren't going to be signed for what they expect. There's going to be a lot of upset players, but they're simply going to have to read the salary cap and, you know, realize that some teams are going to be way, way over it. I'm sure everyone is way, way over it. So it's going to be a challenge for sure, but it's not one of those challenges where you put yourself in a position. This is a situation that every team in the league falls in. So it might make it a little bit easier. And I get the funny feeling that they will spend some time getting that draft capital back, some of it anyway. Though I've always thought we make too much about first-round picks with John Schneider in this particular organization. He's always done better with his staff in the middle rounds anyway. So I would expect them to get more draft capital back, maybe not necessarily first-round draft capital.
You know, we talked about this a bit yesterday, but now that we've all had about 48 hours plus to digest that loss against the Rams, when you're looking specifically at Brian Schottenheimer, the offensive coordinator position, where do you sit with him now? I'm assuming that he is back in 2021. Do you think he's the guy for them?
It's a great question, Stacey. I think it's a fair question to ask. I thought, you know, looking back at this year, like we were talking yesterday, that the mistake they made was switching philosophy in the middle part of the season. I don't think it worked well for them. However, you look at the first part of the season, it worked spectacularly well for them. They also scored the most points they've ever scored in a season this year. So it's not as though he had a bad year. On the other hand, I think that people are looking for a little more creativity. So I kind of agree with you. I think that he's going to be brought back. Pete Carroll has intimated as much and feels very comfortable with it. I think if that's the case, he's going to be on the hot seat a little bit, and he's got to pay more. Well, he's paying plenty of attention to his quarterback, but his quarterback's being in the situation that he wants to be in has got to be a higher priority for him moving forward. And I do think that's possible to work in with running the ball more as well. I mean, we'll see if they can do it. But there's also some interesting names out there as well if they elect to make a change. So I'll be very curious to see what they do here. But I do think that if he's back, and I'm kind of with you assuming that he will be back, he's going to be under the microscope next year.
Now, Groz, is this the first time that you have felt a different shift in terms of people's belief in Pete Carroll? I can't tell if it's just the end of the season and people are upset, or is this the first time that people are really starting to question Pete Carroll's philosophy and ability to get this team to where it needs to, or the desire of where it should go, and that is a Super Bowl.
I sure hope it's just the end of the season stuff. I mean, the Seahawks have gone from 9-7, 10-6, 11-5, 12-4 the last 4 years. They're still a very elite team. I mean, this year obviously didn't end the way people wanted it to. You can say that, well, he wants to run the ball more. He's outdated. Well, look at the teams that are in the playoffs. And with the notable exception, and actually they have Patrick Mahomes, so Kansas City is not run first. A lot of the other teams that are still left in the playoffs, including Aaron Rodgers' Packers, run the ball a lot. So it's not, you're not talking about some sort of radical philosophy or some philosophy that's past its prime. It's the way it's working in the NFL for a lot of teams. So I for one hope that it's simply a matter of just being frustrated at not getting to the Super Bowl, which is fine. But I'll repeat my mantra of yesterday: don't get tired of winning, and you know, just look around and look at some of the places where you're not winning, and what the Seahawks have got going here, and you know, with John Schneider getting re-signed and having Pete Carroll set. I mean, you've got the best player coach coach GM relationship I would say in the NFL. It's meant nine trips to the playoffs. It's meant two trips to the Super Bowl. It's meant a Super Bowl championship. So I'm hopeful that it's just an overreaction to a disappointing end of the season.
All right. He is the Groz. Thanks so much, Groz. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
I'm not sure. I think Mike Salk might be back tomorrow.
Thumbs up for tomorrow. I don't know. We'll figure it out. All right. Bye, Groz.
We've loved having you, Groz.
We've loved it.
Thanks, guys.
See ya. All right, the Mariners are set to begin spring training next month, and we're getting ready. Tune in tonight from 7 to 9 p.m. for the Mariners Hot Stove Show, featuring off-season analysis and interviews with Mariners players and coaches. It's the Hot Stove Show every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. All right, you guys, this season and this wild card loss for the Seahawks had us thinking. It couldn't be more obvious that you've got to get better at one specific position group. We'll tell you where that is next on Jake and Stacey.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross here with you this hour, brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We said that there was one specific area that became very, very apparently an area of need for Seattle. That was in the second half of the season, most especially in that wild card loss. Jake, I have a couple suggestions of what it could be. I mean, I'm looking at the secondary, though they certainly improved. I'm looking at the running back room. I mean, what do you do with Chris Carson potentially leaving? Rashad Penny hurt, but you said it was.
I said it was the offensive line.
Okay.
Now, I think you could make arguments for those particular positions. I think that you could look at your defensive line. But it really, when you look at this roster, relatively as you look at it as a whole, you feel pretty confident in this roster. Receiver group, you may argue that, hey, you need to get a more dynamic third receiver, a more consistent third receiver. You could make that argument, certainly. Tight end group, do you add another guy there? Now that Greg Olsen won't be there, you have Colby Parkinson that will come into his second year, and I think that this group, this franchise, feels very confident about Colby Parkinson's ability to contribute in a big way. So you could have Will Dissly and Colby Parkinson there, but you don't have Jacob Hollister back necessarily. He will be a free agent this season, so that's another area that you have to address. Your defensive line as a whole, I think you feel very confident as long as you can retain Carlos Dunlap, right? Benson Mayoa is a question mark as well. You liked how he played at the end of the season, but Daryl Taylor, who is supposed to be a guy that you feel very, very confident in, who you drafted, who you traded up for in the draft last year, who wasn't able to play this season, you think that he's going to be a big-time contributor for you next year. That's in Pete Carroll's own words. The linebacker group, I think we're going to see the same group roll back again. The secondary, I don't really know what additions you can make outside of just trying to replace potentially Shaquille Griffin if he is not there. So the only area that I really truly feel like you can upgrade is the offensive line position, and this is really overdue. I mean, when you really think about it, Stacey, this is overdue. When you're investing in $35 million into your quarterback, and you believe that you have a franchise quarterback, a legit quarterback, how do you not invest in that player and fully invest in the idea that you have to protect him, right? And when you have that style of offense and when you're able to run the ball effectively because you've got a group that not only can get it done protection-wise, but that can get it done on the ground, that's where you're able to be very dynamic and you're able to dictate what you want to do. So Pete Carroll talking about, all right, well, they go too high coverage, we're going to run the ball. You got to have a group that can really do that. And all the great quarterbacks in this league have had that. That has been one common denominator that they have had throughout their career that, quite frankly, that this franchise has not had in quite some time.
Now, I've liked the depth so far on the offensive line. Cedric Obwehi was okay when he was filling in for Shell. Wasn't the best, but he's not your starter. Jake, you're looking a little questionable. Damian Lewis filling in last minute at center, literally last minute at center, did okay. Again, I think that this... The team has done a good job of making sure that they have
a blue chip right guard.
They've done a good job of making sure that they have decent depth. The problem is that they don't have consistent performance among their starters. I'm not including Dwayne Brown here because Dwayne Brown is Dwayne Brown. So, and Damian Lewis, I thought, had a really solid season. There were some rookie mistakes there, but it's okay. You're a rookie. There's an excuse. But I agree with your take about if you're investing that much money in your quarterback, why are you not investing in the pieces around him? I mean, a very dire example of this would be Joe Burrow in Cincinnati. I don't think that that's the position Seattle is in, even though people point to that and compare it. Although I do think it is fair to say, well, that's like buying a Lamborghini and trying to use regular gasoline, or that's like spending $300 on your hair and getting $5 shampoo or whatever. Like, it makes no sense when you would invest so much money in something and then not invest in the basics you need to run it or make it work. Or whatever you need to do. I thought those were two decent analogies. So it becomes a question with a couple parts. The first is, without two first-round picks, how do you do it? Now you have some money you can spend in free agency. You can make some roster decisions. Go for a guy like Jack Conklin, who is now with Cleveland but was available in free agency as an option. I didn't mind the Brandon Shell move, but that would be an example of spending in free agency versus the draft.
The Brandon Shell, to me, Stacey, and this is where you're stuck with Brandon Shell at right tackle. You're not moving on from Brandon Shell. He will be back. The one thing that did happen with Brandon Shell this season is I think that he proved to be not a massive liability at right tackle. So he was an upgrade over Ifedi.
Yeah.
He was not.
Who was flagged for a false start, by the way, in the Bears game against the Saints.
True to form, right? You can't hide who you are. But what did happen was he got exposed when he had to face elite level pass rushers. And who'd you face the most?
Right.
Leonard Floyd.
Yep.
And he puts you on skates quite often in that last game. But if you're able to, and this is why I feel confident in this, is I'm not saying you need to revamp the whole group. You've got Dwayne Brown, you got Damian Lewis, you got Brandon Shell, three guys that you feel pretty good in. I don't love the matchup of Floyd versus Shell, but maybe
it's
he
Leonard
can get
Floyd.
Better the next year. And yeah, it's Leonard Floyd. But and there's other ways to help your offensive line other than calling deep shots down the field consistently. But to improve your center position and your left guard position, and particularly that left guard position where it isn't a revolving door, where you have Mike Iupati, who unfortunately looks like it is a task to get up off the ground every single time, who is in and out all the time with stingers and neck injuries and things that he's dealing with, very real things that he's dealing with. He just couldn't be out there and do it on a consistent basis. And Jordan Simmons is a good backup lineman. He is not a frontline guy for you. And so if they can invest in those things and really shore up that offensive line, I would feel so much more confident about this group moving forward to be able to get done whatever they wanted to do. Run the ball, pass the ball. That's the area that has been missing with this group the entire time, in my opinion, over the last, at least for over the last, you know, 5 to 4 years.
Yeah, what I don't like is people, and this is from the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. First of all, this isn't to dog your opinion, because thank you for texting in and being part of the conversation, and it is an important point. The 206 says, or the 253 says, money guys, you invested $35 million in a quarterback, meaning, well, how much are you going to spend on your offensive line when you're paying your quarterback that much? It is a fair thing to point out, and people always point to the Tom Brady situation, which is more an anomaly than anything else. What I'll say, though, is that other teams spending a lot of money on their quarterback have found ways to do it through, frankly, better talent acquisition or better draft picks.
Correct.
I mean, they're spending a ton of money on Aaron Rodgers,
mm-hmm.
spending a ton of money on Patrick Mahomes.
Correct.
Spending a ton of money on plenty of other guys. And there are places that you've invested money, Seattle, that didn't necessarily pay off. Greg Olsen, nicest dude, was a help when he was here. You also probably spent more than you needed
to. $7 million.
Granted, that was at a time when you had no idea what your tight end position would look like. Only in hindsight was it a bad investment. But now you know, like there's some places you spent money that you didn't really need to.
Correct.
You can build a good offensive line around a quarterback when he is taking up that like sub or around 20% of your salary cap. It's not impossible.
No.
The problem is they haven't hit there.
Correct. And nor has it been an emphasis. This has always been the area where they've just kind of skirted by, where they have made some investments. They've also made some bigger investments, like the debacle of Luke Jokel at $7 million as your left guard.
Forget.
That was
Jokel and Eddie Lacy.
That was a brutal, brutal signing. But those are times where you have invested and you've completely swung and missed. But they have an opportunity to right that ship. And for Dwayne Brown, think about it for Dwayne Brown's perspective, right? If you want Dwayne Brown to come back, one of the best things that you could do is to go and sign somebody that he knows is going to work alongside him, that he can be fired up about, that I know that I can count on this guy being alongside of me 16 weeks, and we can go and do some damage together in the run game, and that I can work with this person and pass things off in twists and stunts and things of that nature. I think there were often times that Dwayne, you could see him playing and be very frustrated by that fact that there was not that consistent player next to him at that left guard position. So I just think overall, if you're going to improve this roster, Stacey, and you're playing against the Rams, I cannot – it's so obvious to me. You play the Rams. You play the 49ers two times, both of those guys. You play the Cardinals. They all three of them have great pass rush.
Would you plan for those guys? I mean, first of all, I am sure John Schneider does this. But he said with Jamal Adams, one guy he has in mind when he does that is a guy like George Kittle. As in, you build your team around who you would most want to be able to beat.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's like if
you have to compete within your own division.
Right.
And the only way to truly compete within your own division is to upgrade at that offensive line, at that line spot, because of who you're going to play against. So it's a great point, and that's why I'm pointing to that very specific situation. And I point to 2011. John Schneider said after that 2011 season, and particularly against the Oakland Raiders at the time and the Pittsburgh Steelers, they got their butts handed to them up
Brady
front. Yes. They got their butts handed to them up front. And John Schneider said to himself, never will I ever allow this to happen again.
Yeah.
We will not be bullied up front. And that, to me, what this last game was on Saturday, has to be that wake-up call to this group that they cannot afford to keep doing that. Russell Wilson is not the same young player that he once was in terms of running around, scrambling around, and running at that 4-5 speed. He can't bail you out in the same way that he did early in his career, and you can't keep going on the cheap route when it comes to making acquisitions on the offensive line. So that part of it, to me, has to change.
Also, someone saying that Patrick Mahomes doesn't account for a lot of money this year. That's true, but his cap hit next year is $24 million, and it only goes up from there. Worth it, though. All right. Again, this hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Now, Curtis Rogers asked us a very interesting question that we took some time to answer. Here's the question. Tell me what you think, 710-710. Did Saturday and the immediate aftermath represent the first time a majority of Seahawks fans have turned on Pete Carroll? That's next.